Live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
We're here.
Oh, wow. Sorry, we had a little minor camera issue there.
Technical difficulties there.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in. As you know, this show is for all you performers and songwriters and musicians out there just trying to figure stuff out and get a handle on how things work around here. Unlike my mouth. My mouth is not working right now.
We'd like to thank you all for listening. I hope you had a good time. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Hey, we don't have any answers. We barely have vowels and consonants, obviously. We're out slinging songs at night just like you guys are, but we are able to find the right people, bring them into the studio, pick their brains, and give you the opportunity to ask questions as well.
Yeah, and you can do that a couple of different ways. You can go to Facebook. .com/TheMusicRowShow, or you can find us on Twitter at TheMusicRowShow and like us and join in the conversation that's starting right now.
Okay, great.
There you go. So, as you mentioned, we've got an exciting show tonight.
I didn't mention that.
Well, you were mentioning it right before we went on the air.
Oh, that's
Don't
right.
Don't question the greatness over here. Exactly. We've got the VP of Big Machine Music Publishing and friend of the show, Mike Molinar, in the studio with us right now in the first hour.
Yeah, and then hit songwriter Heather Morgan is going to be with us in hour two.
That is exciting. Now, Scott, why don't you go ahead and introduce Mike here.
That's right. You need a glass of water or something?
I'm good.
Okay, just checking. Mike is a friend to the show, actually. He's been here a few times. He and his partner in crime, Martha Earls, joined us several years back. And I actually can... How old's her child?
2.5.
Okay, so it was about 2 years and 9 months ago when you guys came in.
Came strolling in with an artist in tow.
That's right. A couple, if I'm not mistaken. And it was back when they had a boutique publishing company called Effusion Entertainment. He introduced us to hit writers Laura Vels and Greg Bates back when they were young writers on the scene. Now they're big.
Young whippersnappers.
Yeah. He's a great guy, though. We're thrilled for him when he and Martha were tapped to bring their boutique sensibilities to one of the hottest labels in Nashville today, Big Machine Music. That's, of course, Scotty Borchetta, the smartest man on Music Row.
Yes, he is.
That's what we call him.
Right.
Do you have to say it quietly?
Yes, reverently. Yes. We look down.
Yeah,
and
we don't. Yeah, we don't make eye contact. None of that. No.
I've told him that we do that anytime we mention him. Everybody, the smartest man on Music Row, and even with all that going on, he always makes time to visit whenever we run into him around town, which is kind of cool. Most people turn around and walk away, but you've always stopped and visited.
I'm slow. What can I say? Well,
I appreciate that. Yeah. So lots of changes in his career path and in the industry in general. So we have plenty to talk about. It is an absolute pleasure to say, Mike Molinar, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
Yeah!
Thank you for having me back. Yeah, I appreciate it. You guys got all fancy now, right?
Look at this,
huh? You're over here. I mean, the WSM.
No tobacco stains on the wall.
I mean, you've kind of gone all Hollywood.
Yeah.
I mean, Hino's got the Botox going. You got the implants.
Yes, I do.
Calf implants. Calf implants.
I put them in the wrong place.
Yeah,
that explains it.
There you go. But yeah, congratulations to you guys.
Thank you.
Last time I've seen y'all.
Thanks. Well, it seems like every time we have you on, you've had some major career change, which is always a good thing for you, which is awesome. How did you transition to Big Machine? How did all that happen?
Well, I think it was pretty shortly after we saw you last.
Was it because of us?
It actually was.
Oh.
Scott was listening, and he felt like off your recommendation,
right.
He wanted to bring us in. No, very much because we had been in business with Greg Bates and Big Machine through their publishing. We actually shared Greg's publishing with Big Machine. And Greg ended up on Republic Records. And through that whole process, we had worked together, had a year, maybe a little bit more, to get to know each other. And they invited us very graciously to come in and be a part of the machine. And it was really incredible. So we're doing a lot of the same thing that we were doing on a very, very small boutique level, on a major level, with a lot more insight and a lot more muscle and a big engine under the hood, to use the analogy.
Yeah. Well, pull back the curtain for us a bit, if you would. What were the win-win components that made this such a great merging? I mean, what holes did you guys fill and vice versa?
I think that there is an early development part of the business that goes on, and it's in any other business you'd call it your research and development. You've got to go out and find talent as early as you can and take some time to develop it, and it's much more interesting and much less expensive to do it on that level than to try to do it on a record deal level, where you're spending $1 million or more on an artist just to see what they have. So
right. That much?
Sure.
Wow.
And on this level, it really allows you to dig in a little deeper and really have some people monitoring day-to-day conversations with an artist. It's a lot easier to have movement through day-to-day conversations than it is to have one like really hard conversation if you're at a record label and it's so important, and it makes a difference on so many other decisions. But with us, you know, we can monitor it and we can help them prepare. The more it's gone on through the past 2 years, we've been able to learn from just all of the great minds that are over there. I mean, there are four or five promotion heads, depending on how you think of it. I mean, who are over there, who are just brilliant in their own way, who are under Scott. And we just learn from everybody, not just them. So we take that back and try to help the developing artists move along and start developing some of the skills that they're going to need when they hit radio tour and beyond.
Which are what? What are some of those things that maybe people don't think of?
Sure. A lot of it, first of all, you have to start with an identity. I mean, an artist has to find their identity and find their North Star and where they're going to go. And then we really focus in a lot. You know, most of our time is spent on the music and the songs and the songwriting and all of that stuff. But we are able to get an artist out playing possibly the worst gigs that they will play in their life, mm-hmm. although they will play some pretty bad gigs on radio tours. So
sure.
We prepare them for, you know, playing some empty rooms and really developing their craft. But within that, we take the time to watch them play live, help them put together introductions for their songs so that they can do a cut-by-cut when they do visit a monitoring station and just communicate well, communicate their vision well. They know, an artist usually knows who they are. We just help them, I mean, more than anything,
convey
kind
them.
Of just, yeah, yeah, we're maybe more editors along the way, uh-huh. but they know what they're saying. We aren't the ones who give them the words. They lead us, and mm-hmm. we just kind of help put some bumpers on the old bowling alley for them.
Well, I'm just curious, what kind of stuff do you advise when they're playing for a small room? You know, because a lot of those radio tour type situations, you know, you might have like four people or something in the
sure.
room. What do you
do? You know, one of the things immediately that I learned from Jimmy Harnon over there at Republic Records, I mean, he used to talk about the different ways you have to win. You have to be able to win at 4 feet or at 6 feet or something like that mm-hmm. in a boardroom. You need to be able to win on a small arena. You need to be able to win in an amphitheater where you have 17,000 people or more. So you've got an artist needs to develop those performance skills at that level. So there's a comfortability in a small boardroom.
Sure.
There's an eye contact issue because you are so close.
You're
in
like
such proximity.
3 feet away.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to, eye contact. You don't want to make too much eye contact.
yeah.
You know, you don't want to be that guy, right?
And Scott, do you remember that guy? There was a guy. There was somebody who came in for a radio tour when we were at the other station, and it was a small room type of situation,
right.
and he was acting like he was playing the Coliseum or something. I mean, with these huge moves and everything, and it was funny,
right.
actually, but it wasn't meant to be.
I it's exactly that. It's just a comfortability thing, and we have so many great partners all over the city who have been wonderful to us to allow us to bring our acts in to put him in that situation. So anyone from our friends at Cheekwood who have allowed us to stop by and play one of their staff meetings and
some just of our, for practice?
Yes, just for practice. And brilliant. Some of our friends at the different Music Row banks and who have allowed us to do that, ASCAP, BMI.
Nice.
So we really get to put them in these situations, let people play, you know, early interview. I wouldn't call it radio tour. I leave the radio tour prep to our radio guys. But, you know, we just try to give them an opportunity to play in as many different situations as possible.
You know, it's funny because, and then along the way in those radio tours, and people probably know this, but sometimes there's bar gigs and, you know, in between it's like, hey, let's play here for this radio station. They're going to, and in San Diego, there was a bar that would do that every now and then. And I saw two acts there. One of them, I won't say his name. He looked so upset to be there. Like it was below him.
Yeah.
And at the bar?
It was actually a decent sized little stage, but okay. You know, the place wasn't packed to the gills and you could just, he looked irritated and he couldn't wait to get done. Mm-hmm. And that person I never heard from again on the radio even. I mean, he had his one hit.
Right.
The next guy who came in was so much fun. Same amount of people. He had such a good time. He jumped off the stage and danced with someone's grandma and was just this great guy. And that's Rodney Atkins.
Right.
I mean, he understood, you know, right. that it doesn't matter if there's, you know, 50 people in a room or, you know, you play to them.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I have to say, I mean, a couple of the acts that we're working with right now, I have put them in some, I'm apologetic to them, but, you know, I've put them in some horrible gigs.
Ooh, like what?
I mean, playing a restaurant where it was literally nothing but just the staff in the back. There was a fraternity fundraiser it wasn't like cool Animal House fraternity. It turned out to be just kind of like goofy. Uh-huh. Very small, just, you know, people running around, like running around the Rosies kind of thing. So it was just really difficult to get their attention. And actually one of my artists really showed me some metal that she had in that she was able to actually stop. And I mean, at the end of the song, pull them in, try to find a way to get their attention and get the focus back. She did it perfectly. She did it, and it really, really impressed me. So you're going to have those gigs.
Sure.
And I think the other thing is really setting the expectations and the attitude right from the get-go. I think when you have people who feel that they're above it, you've got an issue. I mean, the way to, again, one of the many mantras that we have at Big Machine, if you want to sell 500,000 units, you need to shake 500,000 hands. And so I don't care if there's 7 people there, you better play your heart out for those 7 people and shake those hands and hug them and take pictures and do everything. And those are the expectations that we set with our artists from the get-go.
Right. Wow. That's great.
I love that advice.
Let me see here. Do we have time for this one? No,
yeah.
We don't.
Okay.
Let's take a break. Let's take a break because this is going to be a good long answer.
It's probably a good long question too.
Well, my questions are all about 20 minutes long.
Yeah, so we're here with Mike Molinar, VP of Creative over at Big Machine Music Publishing, and you're listening to the Music Row Show. Come on back.
The sun going down behind it. If there's a good time in this town, girl, we're gonna find it. You look so damn good climbing.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Justin Moore doing Late in the Night Roll.
Woo!
Love that tune. That's, of course, published by Big Machine Music Publishing. We're here with the VP of Creative for that, Mike Molinar for Big Machine Music.
And we were talking during the break, we kind of continued our conversation about shaking every hand and talk a little bit about the platinum standard that Big Machine has with that.
You know, I don't necessarily talk to Scott on a daily basis, but every time that we communicate about artists and he's communicating directly to our artists, he always tells stories, there's always a Taylor story somewhere in there. And you come to understand that Taylor is the platinum standard, that she has just done everything right along the way. And so, you know, that's the expectation.
Kinds of things are the right things?
The right things are just exactly what we were talking about. Shaking every hand, giving the hugs, handwritten notes, the interactions, the small details that make make a difference. And, we just hear all of the stories, and it's, and you know, I have not had the privilege. I was not there for the signing of Taylor or the ride, but, mm-hmm. You just hear it from everybody in the staff who works with her, just, what a high level of, response that she has with her fans and everyone she interacts with.
Yeah.
And,
well, let's talk about the, we haven't talked in a few years, and what are the biggest changes in the publishing industry just in the last few years? What's the biggest challenge, and what's exciting about where we're at right now?
I think to start with what's exciting, I think that there's some great music and there's some great writers, and it's always, there's always another generation right behind, and there's a younger generation that has just started cropping up right now that's really impressive, and it's, they're getting better younger in a lot of ways, and they come with more tools in their bag, and there's a lot of production things that are very, a production element that's very prevalent now, and
Do you think it's because of technology that's happening, that they just are exposed more? Or?
I think so. I mean, there's still a craft element that can only be learned when you're here on the ground and when you're working with really professional writers. And so that is still something that you've got to be in Nashville. And I think, I always encourage younger writers to reach towards some of the more veteran writers and to sit there and study. There's still room to study and learn craft and really be there. Craft will give you success over the long haul. You know, whatever that natural inspiration will get you here and will get you some hits. But, studying the craft and really getting in this community and being very respectful to all the folks who are around, who preceded you and who you're standing on their shoulders, that'll keep you here.
Well, even the veteran writers that we've had on the show over the years talk about never stopping learning. They're always learning something new, because if you get stagnant, that's kind of, you're dead.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that we have a really great history in this town of more veteran writers reaching to the youngers and the younger writers reaching up and trading their, the younger writers bring the inspiration, and the veteran writers have been writing, almost every day for, every year a number of years. And so you can imagine that well starts to go a little dry from time to time. And the younger writers bring that freshness, and they bring a whole new perspective and a whole new set of experiences. We now have a generation that has been legitimately influenced by a hip hop movement and by those beats. But they don't see a difference between having Leanne Womack on one track and Katy Perry on the next track. And, they don't have a problem with mixing all of those things together, because that's just what they love, and it's music, and they don't see the genre differences.
Which is interesting, because that's how Top 40 used to be. It was all mixed together before it got all segmented.
Right.
And I think that's the beauty of country. I think we're a big tent genre right now, and, I am pro that.
Yeah.
I love seeing things as traditional as Justin. My roster is honestly a microcosm of that. I mean, Justin and Dustin are two cowboys. They wear hats, and they, mm-hmm. They perform with that. Dustin has a lot more beats under him and is a little bit more on the contemporary side along the roster, and all the way to a guy that I have named Fancy Haygood, who we share with Dr. Luke and our prescription co-venture. And Fancy is a remarkable talent who can write songs in country, and he has written with Luke and Max Martin, and he's working on his own pop project right now. So we fill in all the colors of the rainbow, and that's what I like about our genre and our town right now.
Well, I love that you mentioned that, the co-venture with Dr. Luke's prescription songs that you guys did recently. How much of that partnership is focused on blending country and pop writers? Is that,
I don't know about the word blend, but it is definitely, it's definitely collaborate. We try to find people who can do that and who are, have the tool set to be able to do that, and are respectful. We just had a camp a couple weeks ago, and actually your next guest, Heather Morgan, we were lucky enough to have her stop in as a guest on a couple of days. But we had people who were like two guys who can write top line, I can write tracks, and they just happened to have worked on the remix version of Bottoms Up for Brantley Gilbert, but they also fundamentally love country music, and they're just trying to learn and try to get into the genre, and I would expect that they're going to write something that's going to be a hit sometime soon in our genre. So it's just finding talent that works across these barriers and exchanging these instead of them staying so separate.
You just mentioned a word that is, honestly, it's kind of new to me, but top line. Talk about that, because that's a whole nother type of songwriting.
Sure. In pop, there's usually a couple people who work on the track, and whether they are playing, you know, the real instruments and they're developing sounds and tones. I mean, I went to one of Luke's master sessions and on a Katy Perry hit, and it was just something like, you know, 200 tracks.
Really?
And out of that, there was probably like 30 that were just one bass drum. I mean, it's ridiculous. All of the time and the craft that goes into it. It's its own craft. But within that, you need somebody to top line and find the words and assist. And usually the artist is involved with some of that. Mm-hmm. And then there are certain writers who have a gift for that rhythm and the rhyme or the melody.
So the melody is not part of the track yet?
Melody is sometimes there's a melody. A lot of times, you know, on a couple of the things that we've collaborated on with Max Martin, I can't talk to his whole catalog, but he is humming or singing a version of it, and the melody's there. And so actually a top liner already has a melody to work with, and they need to figure out how to get these words to fit, which is a really, really difficult little puzzle to do, because it is its own skill. But yeah, that's been a very interesting thing to see over the last couple of years.
And there could be several top liners on a song.
There could be, yes. They put them, they usually are together in a little room while the track guys are working on the next song. So they kick them the track, and they sit there and they're just working on it, trying to bang it out, and then when they think they're ready, they'll pop out and play them some ideas and see what the other guys think.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is its own little factory. It's a very interesting it's different. It's a lot different than the way we go about it here.
Do they send it out to multiple top liners at the same time, different teams?
You know, I don't know that there's one way to do it, but from what I understand, you know, they usually send it out to one person or two people or something to collaborate on and try to bring them in. If there's something not there, and I mean, it's just as random as our business. So there's sometimes, I was told a story the other day of an artist who happened to just pop in the room, or somebody who just happened to be in the studio when they were doing this, and the producer looked at them and said, "Can you top line, just go into the room and try to make something up, like right now." And and that person went away and did it. And the cut is on a like major act. So it's one of those things I just call a jump ball. You know, it's you just happen to be there and position yourself. And that's a lot of what this business is. It's opportunity and putting yourself in position.
Wow. Man, I thought you were going to say, the guy said, "Well, can you sign for the package first?"
Exactly.
And then I'll go get started. So what advantage, since you're part of a label, Big Machine, what advantage does a label have in having its own in-house publishing group?
Well, taking a step back from that question, there are three things that we've been charged with. So, you know, two of them are very much the same functions of another publisher. We actually have existing catalog, and that's the catalog of several artists who were signed to the label before we, or signed to the publishing before we got there, and really managing their catalog and making sure that we are out there pitching it, as well as signing new songwriters, and so pitching outside songs. We are Switzerland when it comes to the rest of the labels. You know, we're the one part where, as competitive as Big Machine is, mm-hmm. we are looking out for the best of everybody, our colleagues and our friends at all the other labels and those artists. We want to be on Darius Rucker. In fact, we are right now, and we want to be on all these acts. So we're out there hustling it to get those. Then we're also there to help develop our existing, either our new artists or just help our current artists in whatever their publishing needs are. And everybody's different. It runs the gamut. Some of them really don't, check in with us as much and just come to us for very specific things. And some of them when we're in cycle on an album, we are scheduling top to bottom. We're trying to bring them new writers. And then when you go to the developing artists, it's everything. We are all things to them. So it's a multi-pronged job. So with the benefits of being there, you get to see the way a label works. And you for 15 years as a publisher, I had an idea of what things were, and I sat around while songwriters and publishers had conspiracy theories of the way things were going down, and probably came up with several myself. And now you see it, and it's nothing of what you thought. It's not nefarious. It's not malicious. There's not any of, I can't say there's never anything, but it's just really not that thing. Quality wins, passion wins, people who put themselves in position win. There's a really, again, to go back to those jump balls, you got to just, bring the quality on a consistent basis and develop a real relationship as a songwriter to the label, and you'll be there. We have one of the absolute best A&R people in Allison Jones, and I see how limited, truly, truly limited her time is with mm-hmm. everything she has on her plate. And when you hear all the complaints of, oh, why won't that person meet with me? Well, man, I see it. She's trying to get in as many people as she can as a project goes through. She also has an incredible memory and a recall for songs over the years. So if you've got a truly great song and you probably pitched it to her 3 years ago, she remembers it. She'll pull it up and bring it up for the right artist at the right time. She absolutely is a rain man of A&R.
Definitely time for a 4-quarter ballad. Definitely time. Definitely time. So let's talk about that. Given how little time people have nowadays, in a town full of 50,000 songwriters. That have great songs stuffed in their guitar cases. How does one stand out when they do have that opportunity to sit down in front of somebody like you or an Allison?
I think you have to be extremely respectful of time. I think you need to bring your best. If you have to explain the song or set it up, then it probably isn't right. Mm-hmm. When
that's interesting. Again,
When you're explaining, you're losing. It's another one of the quotes from the company. So it should just stand on itself, on its own, and just get it. It just makes its way across. We're looking for a body of work, not necessarily on the publishing side. We're for writers that we're interested in. We're looking for a body of work. It's not just one hit song. Not to say that I haven't done a single song deal, but I really don't do many at all. Because I really want to invest in people who are just have the gift. And so I'm looking for that difference. For Allison, it's a completely, different thing. She needs to meet with really legitimate advocates for songwriters who understand the time constraints, who understand what she's looking for, and who pitch their best. And you also have to understand, when you work with artists, it's you're trying to fit an artist's vision, and mm-hmm. sometimes what they're looking for is just the needle in a haystack and a needle in a haystack. You're just trying to find that right thing that goes along and advances their career, not just that it's a great song, but it really takes them to the next level or says what they want to say.
Can you give us an example of that needle in a haystack, like when someone's looking for something that specific?
I don't know.
Without any names, of course.
That's difficult. I don't know if I can think of something that's exactly that. And frankly, I think a lot of times when we put something out on a tip sheet, we almost know that that's not going to be it. I see it in other people's tip sheet. It's like, yeah, they're looking so specifically for that. It's almost not going to be that. You just need a great, something really great that's on the forefront of that artist's career, not on the backside. So, you're really looking to lead them. It's enough of them, but you're leading it into the next era. so that their current fans are coming along. You're not losing them, but you're also always growing their brand. When you understand what an artist's brand is and how hard they work, then that's how you when you start to dial in a little bit further.
Okay. Excellent.
Well, great. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Mike Molinar from Big Machine Music Publishing here on the Music Bro Show. Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
That's I like
God
this.
Made Girls, Ray Lynn, published by Big Machine Music Publishing. And is she one of Big Machine's artists?
She is. She is on Valerie Records, and that is going for ads here in June 30th.
All right.
We're excited. She's had an amazing radio tour, and she is just an incredibly, uniquely talented young lady, and I've loved
Nice.
Working with her over the past 2 years and getting her ready.
She's
for
got a
album.
Really unique voice. I like that.
She does. She does. You may recognize her from The Voice, actually. She was on the first season of it, but has really taken a step back and developed what is naturally hers. I mean, she is a natural talent when it comes to songwriting and performing and singing, bundle of energy, but she has a rhythm to her words and an ability to translate emotion that I haven't seen in a while. She's really, I'm really excited that she's now heading out into the world and everyone's going to get to see it for real. So,
sweet.
That's exciting. We're excited to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We were talking before the break about what we can do to stand out in a positive way.
Sure.
And I know I ask this question anytime we have a publisher in, but I think our listeners need to hear this on a regular basis. What can writers do in that first meeting to guarantee they don't get a second meeting?
That they don't?
Yeah.
Either stay too long or try to argue or convince or, you know, I don't know. I think the best thing that you can do is take up the least amount of time possible, bring your absolute best, regardless of whatever it is. Frequently I get asked, what are you looking for? Like, you're looking for a tempo? You're looking for a ballad? I'm just looking for the best song that represents you and your unique vision. So if you can come in, take 15 minutes instead of 30 or an hour and just get in, get out, impress me, then I'm going to take the meeting the next time.
Okay. And I'm guessing you prefer something recorded rather than played live? If a writer comes
you know,
in?
I honestly, I don't mind if it's live, if it's great.
Okay. As long as you can stop them.
As long as, yeah. I usually, if it's a 15 minutes meeting, you're going to play me three songs. I'm going to probably listen to all of the song. But,
okay.
Just out of respect and you know, that you've poured your heart out into the song. I'm going to sit there and, you know, listen to it.
Well, let me ask you, going back to what you were talking about earlier about, you know, finding that vision and finding the right material for an artist, talk about that fine line between finding something new and unique, but then a lot of times we hear people complaining that, well, they're actually not looking for something new and unique. They're looking for, you know, whatever the hit is right now. So there's a fine line there. What's
there
the balance?
Is. There is. You know, it is... that's always the problem. You know, you're looking for something that's well-crafted and you're looking for, but something that's still fresh. So, you know, how do you balance those things out? Especially when you're new to town or you're newer. So, I mean, part of that is the reason that there is publisher, and that's where we're your advocate. We're the ones that can go in and take a second and explain what's happening here. We can, you know, tell an A&R person or tell an artist that there's a whole body of work behind this, but this is just listen to this and see what's going on. Point out the things.
Yeah.
I don't really consider that sales. I just consider that more of an explanation.
Okay.
of what one of my writers is doing. I mean, we had 2 years ago, we had Laura Veltz in the studio, right? And
right.
we all saw how special she was. And just a couple, you know, at the beginning of the year, she was celebrating a number one for Drunk Last Night. When I brought her into you guys, she was just pretty much fresh off the boat.
Right, right.
So, you know, we saw it. We saw how special her vision was and her ability to communicate. Number one thing is just emotion. I want to see emotion in a song. I want to see that you're able to translate that emotion in a unique and simple way. You know, country is a fairly simple genre of music. There's usually just one big emotion attached to it. If there's
right,
if you're
right.
aiming for a lot of shades of complexity, we're probably going to get confused here. You got to remember that you got either a single mother or a mother of a couple of kids driving a minivan with everyone complaining and crying and screaming, and she's trying to, you know, keep people from killing themselves in the back of the minivan or each other. And they finally gets the car silent for a second and turns on the radio, and she hears a song, and you now have her for 3 minutes, if max.
Yeah.
What are you going to do to reach her? You know, what are you going to do to get that? Or it's the kids in the car. Our demo is skewing a lot younger. So what are you going to go do to go get them? That in the middle of everyone screaming and yelling and having these conversations and having a great time and talking about what they're doing tonight, that a song comes on and it just stops them in their tracks and they want to turn it up. It's got to have the power of that emotion.
Yeah.
I'm just working on a song just now called "My Brother Is a Doo-Doo Head."
I think yeah,
that might
nice.
Reach
I think
the younger.
That might have legs.
Nice. That
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
That yeah. is.
So let's
yes.
work on that during the next break.
Yes.
What do you think, Katrina? Yes.
It's thumbs up from producer Katrina.
All right. Let's take one more break. We're going to be back with more of Mike Molinar with Big Machine Music. You're listening to The Music Row Show. Stick around.
Somewhere there's gonna be pain. Somewhere there's gotta be love.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Give 'Em Hope. It's a great song by a whole bunch of people. We got Reba, which we just heard right there. Ban Perry, Martina, Toby Keith, Chris Young, Thomas Rhett, and probably some other people involved in that too, right?
A whole number of them, yes. It's part of the Outnumber Hunger campaign. Which is Big Machine Label Group and General Mills. And it is all in, if you go to your local grocery store, there might be some of your favorite Big Machine Label Group artists. And currently it's Florida Georgia Line on the cover of the boxes. There's a really great program where if you buy that box, you have a code on it, you enter your code into the website, and you get a couple free downloads of music, and then General Mills sends some food down to your local food bank, and it helps feed some hungry people in your local area. So it's really just a great circle; everybody wins, and it's been a great program. So, song was written by Fancy Haygood and Megan James. Specifically for this, or not specifically, we were lucky to find it and apply it to this, and so we're very grateful to them.
Wow,
that's fantastic. Now, how long has that been going on?
This is in its third year right
okay.
now.
Wow.
So you were part of a recent conference here in town, the GrowCo. Grow Your Company, and I heard you talk a little bit about how songwriters are entrepreneurs in a way. So can you talk about that and what kind of you covered there?
Absolutely. I mean, songwriters are the original small business. I mean, they go to work every day and have to come up with an idea to put through the entire process all day. I mean, it's they're entrepreneurs every day, you mm-hmm. know, not just on the big picture, but on the little picture. And it's a very difficult business. Their business model is difficult, and I'm sure you've heard a lot about the legislation that's going on, and, mm-hmm. and you've probably yeah. seen a lot of the notices from ASCAP and BMI about the proceedings that have been going on, and I think there's a lot of stuff to pay attention to right now. There's a lot of that changes that need to be made for songwriters for their pay and to make sure that their uses are being fairly compensated. You know, it's
what are the most important, you think, right now?
You know, I'm biased. I think that the Fed is looking into the ASCAP and BMI consent decrees, which this gets real technical real fast, but that's what really keeps them from doing certain functions and allows them to do certain functions. They were considered monopolies many, many years ago, decades ago, and so they're put under pretty strict rules. So there's certain things that they can do and certain things they can't. And I think to allow them the room to operate and to allow songwriters as a second level to operate to make sure that they're compensated fairly. There's actually when we go to this certain rate court, we're not able to bring up other markets to show or even to show other examples as proof that we are being underpaid. So we can't bring evidence. It's like being on trial for murder and you can't really, have somebody exonerate you. It's kind of really ridiculous. That might be a little dramatic. But just the fact that we can't bring evidence to show our market value, it's pretty ridiculous. So we're just looking at a lot of things that need to be overturned right now. And luckily, the right people are looking at them right now. We are grateful to NSAI. We're grateful to ASCAP. I know that they've been out there on Capitol Hill doing quite a bit with the hearings that have been going on. We have to do something to make sure that streaming is compensated fairly. It is ridiculous to look at the royalties for some of the writers that I manage or that are in our company and see what they've been paid for over a million spins and it's like $137 for a million people, playing their song. It is that low. That is not an exaggeration. That's ridiculous. I think if you asked anybody, stopped anybody out here in the halls of Opryland and just said, if your song was played $1 million, what do you think that you should be paid? And I guarantee you it's going to always be more than $137.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
$139.
Yeah. Plus tax. Yeah.
Well, this has been great. We just have another minute. You're coming into leadership music.
Yes.
Real quick, what is that? Why is that important? And how does one get involved in that?
Sure, I'm extremely excited to be picked for this year's class. Leadership music is about 46 or 48 people from all areas of the music business, recording, label, publishing, songwriting, banking, legislative, you name it. So there's about two or three per every element, and this brings all of them together. You go through a series of weeks where previous classes help educate you on as to their end of the business. Just like I was saying earlier, I didn't really know about really in depth on the record label side. I knew their functions, I knew a lot of things, but I just really didn't have a real hands-on grasp. Well, this helps you work through each of those ends of the business over a series of weeks. It's one week or so a month through next year. So we have some amazing people in our class. I really consider myself to be very lucky to be picked. And it's a application process and it's highly competitive. So I'm just grateful to be a part, and I'm looking forward to meeting my class in a couple months.
Sweet.
Well, we're grateful for you for coming in on a Sunday night and spending some time with us.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Well, we've got another great hour of the show coming up with hit songwriter Heather Morgan, who Mike was so kind to hook us up with. So we can't wait to chat with you. So come on back to the Music Row Show in just a few minutes and listen up.
And tell Scott Borchetta we said smartest man.
Smartest man in the music business. Yeah.